Hey everybody, welcome back once again to the Catholic Teacher Podcast. My name is Jonathan Doyle. Great to have the pleasure of your company one more time. Okay, let's do the housekeeping first. If you're a new listener, do me a favor, please make sure that you've subscribed to the podcast. You could be seeing this for the first time on the webpage, but you can link out to your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Android, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, please make sure you subscribe. There's also a sign-up box here on the website so that we can make sure we get each new episode to you. So please do that so we can make sure we get each episode to you. We've had some great guests recently and really looking forward to bringing a whole range of interesting, passionate Catholic educators, principals, leaders, bishops from all over the world. I don't want you to miss any of those. Look, other housekeeping, wherever you're seeing this in the show notes, there'll be a whole bunch of links. I want you to check those. I've just released the audiobook version of my best-selling book, Tools and Fuels, How Catholic Teachers Can Beat Burnout, Become Saints, and Save the World. So if you haven't got the hard copy, grab that. The audiobook version's there. And of course, most importantly, please check out the Going Deeper program. That's our online weekly formation program for Catholic schools. 400 Catholic schools around the world using that program. If you're not using it yet, please, there's a free trial. Take that four-week trial. See how that program can work for you. It's a wonderful chance just to get weekly formation in the essence of Catholic identity for your school. It's inspirational, motivational, educational. You're going to love it. So please check out Going Deeper. Also, if you'd like me to come and speak, just check out the link to my staff speaking page. You'll be able to see my keynote to almost 10,000 teachers at the NCA convention. Get a feel for what I do. But look, that's pretty much it from me. I want to introduce you to our fantastic guest. This week we're talking to the president of Cristo Rey College Prep in Dallas, Texas, the wonderful Kelby Woodard. This is an interesting man with an interesting story. Started off in customs, then he went and worked in Target, then he went in big corporate and working in the corporate environment around the world, then into politics. And then felt a real call on his heart after hearing some students give some testimony one day. As you're going to hear, some students gave testimony about a bill that was being debated, and that just changed everything. So you're going to hear Kelby's journey from business to politics to education, and you're going to hear about what's happening in the Cristo Rey environment there in Dallas. Look, he's got so much wisdom for us. There's just a lot of insights here around what it takes to build a great culture, what it takes to create change, and how Catholic schools can be a huge part of cultural change, both for families but also for our wider society. So there's a lot of stuff here that I hope you're going to love. I want you to share this episode with people. We'll have some links to the school so you can check out what they're doing there. But for now, sit back, relax. Let's rip into this awesome discussion with Kelby Woodard from Cristo Rey College Prep in Dallas. Let's do it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to the Catholic Teacher Podcast. I got a feeling this is going to be a good one. We're joined this week by the current president of Cristo Rey College Prep in Dallas, Kelby Woodard. Welcome to the Catholic Teacher Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
Busy day. If it's about 6:30 in the evening, have you been at work today?
Oh, of course. Yep. We don't really take much of a summer at Cristo Rey. So, you know, every day is almost as busy as the next.
When did you start back from your break?
Well, so officially school starts next Monday. However, because of our work study program, we've had 138 freshmen on campus since July 1st. Wow. And our last day of school was on June 20th. Okay. So we had about a week and a half where we didn't have any kids on campus, and that was kind of slow and boring. So we brought them back early.
I have a sense that boredom isn't a problem for you with the work you do.
That's right. Yeah.
There's so much I want to talk to you about, but let's go to the backstory a little bit first. We want to talk about you've had such an interesting career as a businessman, as an entrepreneur, and then in politics. So spin us through a little bit of the backstory before we get to what's happening at Cristo Rey. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey so far.
Sure. Well, you know, life is lived in chapters, and it all kind of builds upon itself to hopefully a happy conclusion. My first career actually was with the U.S. Customs Service, and realized after about a year and a half of that I saw guys that had been in the service for 20, 25 years and were just ready for retirement. So I just decided that's not what I wanted to do the rest of my life.
Yep.
And so I started working for Target Corporation, not the Australian version, but the US version.
Yeah.
And I started catching shoplifters on the sales floor of a Target store here in Dallas.
Wow.
And lo and behold, after 12 years, ended up in headquarters in Minneapolis and ran their overseas operations. So about 84 countries. And I spent a lot of time traveling. So I decided to stay home more. So quit that job and started a couple of companies related to international trade and international security.
Yeah.
And that went well and then got bored. So I ran for office and was elected to the Minnesota House of Representatives, which is really where the Christa Ray story starts.
Yeah.
Because the kids in the Twin Cities School would come and testify before my committee, the Education Finance Committee, and I fell in love with these guys. So when they decided to open a school in Dallas, I threw my hat in the ring, and when they offered me the job, I sold the companies, resigned my seat in the house, and we moved the family back home to Dallas.
Well, this is a massive change. Let me ask you something. When you talk about that these young people would come and testify, take us to that moment. What were they talking about, sure, and why did it impact you?
Sure. Well, I was carrying the bill in Minnesota for school choice, for scholarships for private schools. And so the kids in the Christa Ray Twin Cities School learned that I was carrying that bill and that it was going to be heard before the Finance Committee, which I was the lead on. And they came and testified, and their stories were, there wasn't a dry eye in the house after hearing their stories. We were spending a significant amount of money, especially in Minneapolis and St. Paul, per pupil in the public schools. And the results were just not there. You know, we had 50% of kids graduating from those schools from high school. And 20% of those kids were graduating college ready. Meanwhile, these same demographic of kids were telling stories about, in their public schools, they've been told they weren't college material. So they're put on a different track. Lo and behold, they get into Christa Ray, and 4 years later, they're getting full ride scholarships to, big Jesuit schools like Marquette and, public schools like the University of Minnesota. And it just changed the trajectory of their lives. And I was sold.
Take me to the core of that. By this stage in your life, you're a pretty seasoned business operator. Now you're in politics. And, I know that it's a little different in the US, but our politicians here, they become, you can become pretty hard of heart pretty fast in that game. I'm really interested in what actually moved you. Like when these young people, what was it specifically that, because this led you to make a huge change in your own life. What impacted you? What affected you when you heard these stories?
I think politicians sometimes get a bad rap. I think most politicians at least start off wanting to do good, which is why they ran in the first place. And so I guess I was only in my second term, so I wasn't as hardened and grizzled as I could have been. their stories really did touch even people who decided not to vote for my bill in a way that is really hard to describe, because their stories were the stories of all the kids that we were trying to help. Why we were trying to spend all that money in public education and really struggling to figure out how to make it work. And lo and behold, here's Christa Ray spending a lot less money in a different way and making the impact we all wanted to make.
Yeah.
And there it was.
So let's talk about that. So for those people not familiar with the backstory, Christa Ray begins with the vision of Jesuit Father John Foley back in 1996. Bring us up to speed with the core of the Christa Ray model. Help people understand it.
Sure. So back then, the Jesuits, kind of in their own style, went into this neighborhood in Chicago, and they were tasked with finding out what that community wanted. And really, they had an open mind. It could have been a hospital, could have been just about anything. But of course, the educators, the Jesuits, lo and behold, the community wants a high school. And really, at that point, it was, we just want a high school we can send our kids to, and it'd be a safe place for them where they're not going to feel bullied or, unsafe, I guess.
Yeah.
And so the Jesuits said, boy, we've been doing that for 500 years. That's a slam dunk. Went to all their donors, and the donors said, no, Father, those are the schools we're closing. I don't know if you're reading the news here,
yeah,
but those schools are not financially viable. That's why we're closing them. And so they came up with this idea of having students earn their tuition. Many of the people who were looking at starting the school said, we worked our way through high school and through college. Why don't we institutionalize that in a Catholic college prep school?
Wow.
Fast forward 22 years, there are now 36 schools in the Christa Ray network and over 12,000 students, including 484 students at Christa Ray Dallas, that are pursuing a Catholic college prep education in parts of cities that have lost their Catholic education and have lost their Catholic education identity because of finances.
So this goes to the core of something that really animates you. So, and it's something that really struck me as well early in Pope Francis's pontificate was this metaphor of the field hospital. I don't know, we have a saying here in Australia, you probably have it there too, but it's you often say it's better to build a fence at the top of a cliff than have an ambulance at the bottom. But in our culture, as you know so well, there's so much disconnection, so much family breakdown. I think Pope Francis was trying to get us to think about a vision of the church as a place where people could come with that woundedness that's really present in our culture. So talk to us a little bit about that vision of going into the city, the field hospital concept. Speak to that for us a little bit in terms of the Cristo Rey model.
Sure. Well, it is reintroducing Catholic education to the community that it started in hundreds of years ago here in the United States. And that's the immigrant community. And because of, again, finances, a lot of our Catholic schools have moved to the north. Well, in Dallas here, the more prosperous north part of the city. And while they do a great job of providing a Catholic education, they only have so many dollars they can give to kids who can't afford it.
Yeah.
So that in those schools where, demographics of the families are not financially stable, there is no other model for that. The Catholic Church doesn't have enough money to do that. Yeah. So by opening these Cristo Rey schools in those parts of the community, they're reintroducing that. We're on a campus of a parish called St. Augustine that has 8 masses every Sunday. Wow. It is packed to the gills with Catholic families wanting to pursue their faith, but they've never really had a chance at a Catholic college prep education until now. So, 96% of our kids are Catholic. They identify themselves as Catholic at Cristo Rey Dallas. And 75% of them had never stepped foot in a Catholic school before they came to Cristo Rey Dallas.
It's just fascinating to listen to you. I mean, our experience here is so different because there's so much government money. And I say this on almost every podcast. You have to be careful what you wish for because the government money in this country has essentially wiped out Catholic education. And I might lose a few of my Australian listeners saying that. But really, the Catholicity in our schools has taken a huge hit because they're flush with funds, but there's this inverse relationship in terms of identity. And when you don't have to struggle sometimes for your identity and your charism, that thing can just slowly die. Just help me understand. So the basic model is that students, it's a college prep, so they're really focused on going forward when they graduate. But they're actually, This is part of your work. So you have to go out, partner with businesses, create opportunities for students to actually work while studying, and that money will then go towards their college education.
Right. So I'll give you the short version of how that works, right?
Yeah.
So our students are working in white-collar environments. For us, that means 135 of Dallas's most prestigious companies, including companies like the Dallas Morning News, Hunt Oil, PwC, Deloitte, a lot of different law firms. And the way that works is four students are sharing a job. So a job team consists of a freshman, a sophomore, a junior, and a senior.
Wow.
The juniors always work Mondays. The sophomores always work Tuesday. The freshmen always work Wednesdays. And the seniors work Fridays. Oh. And then they rotate the Friday. So, the first week of the month, the juniors are working that Friday. So it is a real job. And for that, that job team receives an entry-level job rate of $34,500.
Wow.
So that means 70% of their tuition is covered by the fact that they are earning it themselves. And let me give you just two really quick results of that. Not only can we provide a Catholic college prep education as a result, but just think what it does to a student's psyche. Nobody kind of came in and kind of parachuted in and saved them and said, I am granting you a scholarship to a college prep school. Now go forth and do it. These kids, by the time they graduate, are like, I earned it.
Yeah.
And that does something to their grit, to their psyche. The second thing, you mentioned connectivity that Pope Francis is talking about. It's not only the effect on the kids, it's the fact that these kids from the poorest areas of Dallas are interacting with the richest people in Dallas at their jobs.
Wow.
And just think about what that does to them. Instead of, boy, isn't that terrible? Poverty stinks and I'm going to write a check for $100 to the food bank and sleep well at night. Yeah. Now they're on a journey with our kids. When they talk about, you know, Trump saying he wants to build a wall, and yet that person at PwC now can see what that means to Mateo Villarreal's family because he's walking with them.
Yeah.
And it's not just a news story. It personalizes it. And so that connectivity between parts of the city and between economic classes really changes what this city is. And that's our goal.
No, I'm just pumped listening to you. I'm sitting here going, I want to ask an obvious question. How did we miss this? Like, I listen to you and I go, this is a no-brainer. One of the great things about this is that it can obviously shift generational, intergenerational poverty. Like, we have a big problem with that here where, you know, kids grow up in a home, dad's either not there, or they grow up with poverty, they just perpetuate it, they repeat it. I mean, this model provides an enormous human dignity, but it's also got a red hot shot of actually breaking significant generational patterns, yeah?
Well, very true, and I probably make it sound easy. It is a lot of work to get there. I mean, so those 135 job partners represent this year $4.1 million in revenue to the school that normally would have been paid out of tuition that our families can't afford to pay.
Wow.
But it takes a lot of effort to get those jobs and convince them, you know, those companies that we are, one, going to provide them value, that we can train our students to be able to do Excel, to be able to do VLOOKUPs on an Excel table. To be able to answer your phones in a professional way, to be able to translate. Most of our students are Hispanic and speak Spanish. So that is a trait that we are working with them to turn into a business skill, a professional skill, so that they can use that after college and you know, have even a better job and a better opportunity for them and their family. So but it's a lot of work to get there, but you're right. I mean, that's why there's 12,000 kids in the program now throughout the country, because it does work.
So let me ask you this. You'd had a fair bit of experience in business. You had a political career underway. Why not stay there? Why not just, when I hear you say, you know, it takes a lot of work, this is what I'm interested in. My mantra is that you can't do a supernatural task with natural resources. And that eventually, if it's just a question of, there's a huge importance to being intelligent, proactive. But listening to you, something else inspires you and keeps you in the game. Why didn't you just look the other way?
We have a signature verse at Christo Rey Dallas, and that is Paul's conversion, right? So in the Acts of the Apostle, where Paul, you know, at the time he's not Paul yet, but he is, you know, on his way to Damascus. And he is doing the bidding of the emperor, right? He is going to persecute the Christians. He's doing his job. He's just marching along like we all do, right?
Yeah.
And at some point he gets knocked off his donkey. Sometimes we say knocked off his ass, but it's really his donkey. It's knocked off him. And, you know, he gets up and says, what's happening? And God says, you know, get up and go into the city, and there you will find what I have in store for you.
Yeah.
And we use that because there are so many people in Christo Rey that have done exactly that. And, you know, it was a gift from the Catholic Church. It's a gift from God, in my opinion, for me to be able to do this. I mentioned life, living, and chapters. Everything I have done in my life, from being an entrepreneur to being in big business to politics, has given me the skill sets I need to be able to run a Christo Rey school.
Yeah.
And the smarts to know that I am not a curriculum guy. I'm not an academic. And so I can identify talent in that area, and my principal runs that, and I don't interfere with that, right? Because I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. My job is, and if this was a traditional Catholic school, they never would have hired me, right? Because those skills aren't necessarily what, you know, a traditional Catholic high school looks for. So it is a gift to me, in my opinion, that Christo Rey Dallas came at the time it did and allowed me to take the role it did.
Why are you passionate about this model? What inspires you about it, the energy that you bring to it? What inspires you about it?
Well, you know, one of the things that I don't talk about often, but it really is one of the inspirational points, is this marriage of the private sector and Catholic education, right?
Yeah.
That instead of, we should be very happy when our kids graduate and go off and become community organizers or work in nonprofit or work in you know, as teachers, but really getting kids who have never been exposed to what a corporate setting is, to what, you know, the power of being in the private sector provides, This provides that for them. It makes them realize that, you know, if you're successful, you had to work hard to get there, and now you have an obligation to give back. And so, you know, that is something that this model brings to the table that I have never seen another school model, education model, regardless of whether it's Catholic or not, to be able to provide to students. And that is inspiring to me, because I think if we can create a generation of socially responsible private sector professionals through Cristo Rey, we've done our job, because that Catholic piece isn't missing, right? That Catholic piece is a part of their identity in becoming those professionals.
I'm going to have to put this in the show notes, because a friend of mine who's actually the Vicar General here in the diocese, Archdiocese here, wrote a brilliant book on Catholic entrepreneurship. Oh, it's good. It's literally called Entrepreneurship in the Catholic Tradition, and I'll send you a link to that. But the reason I mention it is I want to riff with you a little bit on, look, at least in this country, there's a suspicion of joining words like entrepreneurship, private enterprise, and Catholicism in a single sentence. Now, let me get really controversial, because, you know, I might lose a couple of listeners, but Brian Tracy, the American speaker, had a very interesting quote where he said, the best way you can help the poor is by not being one of them. That'll rattle people a little bit, but I think what he means is that creating employment, building businesses, generating revenue, moving people out of intergenerational poverty happens out of excess and abundance. It happens because there's – so I'm just interested, because I wonder if sometimes in our faith there's a glorification of poverty for itself, as in, well, do you know what I mean? Like, we kind of grew up with this idea that it's – that poverty is kind of an intrinsically noble thing. But so how do you navigate the way through that relationship between poverty, business, excellence, professionalism? How do you filter all that in a Catholic lens?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And it's one that I kind of struggle with sometimes, right? Of how does all this come together? And one of the things I like to say about this job is it's the best job I've ever had, but it's the one that has made me the most uncomfortable, right? Yeah. It makes me ask sometimes why, you know, we have such wealth with, you know, some individuals who, you know, tell me, listen, Kelby, I can't give you a job yet. I got to think about it. I'll call you in 2 weeks when I get back after I take family and friends on a private jet to Milan for a couple of weeks. I'm going to tell you whether or not I have the resources for $34,000, right?
It's like people saying, I'm in Aspen right now. The reception's bad. I'll call you back.
Right. I'll call you back and tell you what I think about poor people after I get back from Aspen. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think you're onto something about the glorification of it, because people, you know, that we work with, don't want to be poor. even if you think it's romantic, it's not for them.
Yeah.
And you can't lose. That's why this Catholic identity is so important. If we were a charter school, you know, or a non-traditional public school doing this, we would not be as successful, and I wouldn't be passionate about it.
Yeah.
Because then it's just about, let's find kids a pipeline for a profession that they can work at for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
It's the Catholic identity piece that makes me comfortable with it, because we're instilling that Catholic, those Catholic values on these kids as they're working and as they go off into their professional world, that is instilled upon them as they become the leaders in business and government and the nonprofit sector. Without the Catholic piece, it's just another school preparing people for a job.
Correct. And this is something that's kind of come through in a little bit of what you've been saying, is that as these young people are placed in these corporate environments, and then they go on to college, and then they enter the workforce, there's actually an evangelization, a Christification of the professional sphere. Because how many students in the network at the moment? There's 20-odd thousand. How many have you got in there across all the
– Yeah, 12,000.
12,000. So
12,000 students. Yeah.
12,000 students so far. I mean, if we think about the kind of leaven of that in a culture, if you get 12,000, you know, well-formed, you know, young people who know their faith and also have a passion, I mean, like you just said, they're going to end up in corporate leadership. They're going to end up in political leadership. Right. And I think that's a really crucial thing. There's a few other things that you've mentioned in the prep we were doing for this. Recruiting a world-class team. Talk to me about that. What are you looking for in people? What are some of the key attributes of the staff there that you really look for and think are central?
Well, they're entrepreneurial, first and foremost.
Yeah.
So when we started the school, before we even had kids on campus, you know, we took about 14 months to prep all this and we're before that first student showed up on campus. And what we were looking for were people who had the passion for the mission and, you know, brought a skill set. So a lot of times we would hire people without knowing where they were, what job they were going to have, because I would recognize a talent in them and say, I'm not sure what you're going to do, but whatever you are going to do, it's going to be great. And so really look for that entrepreneurial attitude and a change of, you know, growth mindset, an understanding of what it is to be in Catholic education. Because for one, we don't have, our endorsing order is the School Sisters of Notre Dame. Yeah. There are no chaplains on our campus that are assigned. We do mass at the mercy of priests in the diocese who come and say our masses once a month. So we have to build what our Catholic identity is through that charism of the School Sisters of Notre Dame and the Jesuits and the diocese without having, you know, men and women of cloth in our buildings. So I need somebody that can help with that as well, that understands that, again, this is not a charter school with a great idea. This is a Catholic high school who happens to have a work-study program and a college prep program. We are Catholic first and foremost, and we're able to do that because of those other two things.
Take us through your own Catholic journey. Like, we'll get to that. We're going to get onto the Catholic identity piece. What's your own sort of spiritual journey? You're obviously a man of deeply committed faith to be doing this work, but cradle Catholic or road to Damascus? Give us your own background.
Cradle Catholic, which, you know, is sometimes the worst kind, right? Yeah. We're the ones that don't necessarily have a gratefulness for our faith. Yeah. And, you know, went to a Jesuit high school here in Dallas that I have two sons at now and proud alumni of, Jesuit Dallas College Prep. Yep. And so that really, I'll tell you, and maybe that is, you're like a therapist now. I'm unveiling this piece of it.
No chance.
I think that had a lot to do with where I am now, is that by spending those 4 years at a Jesuit high school, really deepened my faith and sense of you use your talents for the greater glory of God, right? And so while I may not have known what that was really defined as for the first 20 years of my professional life, when I heard those kids testify before that committee, it all came clear to me at that point. All of this was building towards that. I mean, we went to mass every Sunday and we have five kids. So we're doing the Catholic thing. But, you know, it was a Sunday thing, right? Yeah. And then I would go off to work and, you know, experience people that were not faithful, people that were doing things that made me uncomfortable and just kind of did it because that's the business world.
Yeah.
And then this opportunity came up for me not to live that way anymore. And again, the most uncomfortable I've ever been in my entire professional career is as president of a Catholic high school, because it's challenging.
Yeah.
You know, challenging to, you know, if you get it wrong, how does it impact?
Yeah.
And, you know, you get something wrong at Target. Yeah. Okay. So it may impact the stock. You know, people may not be able to spend all that time in Aspen.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, it's all okay. You get it wrong here, and there are 484 souls who are counting on us to provide them this opportunity. And it's, so it's, you know, a little bit more burden on your shoulders than.
Well, let me ask you about that, because in the work that I do, in my own life experience, both, you know, in business and in ministry, it's been what I call the ultimate inconvenient truth, right? Was that years ago, I was a little bit younger, and I was at a church men's thing, and there's a guy who's a little bit older than me, he's a very good friend now, incredibly successful winemaker globally. Now, this guy is, but anyway, he's at this weekend, and he's talking about his own faith journey, and he's like, he was kind of talking about how he didn't feel he could really do that much, and God did everything, and we've got to. And I was sitting there going, "Yeah, whatever, man." I was just there going, "No, we got to hustle. We got to work hard. Like, God's really busy, right? So we're just going to handle this corner of the universe." And I remember very clearly thinking, "Nah, I don't agree." As I've got older and life becomes more complex, I am just floored by the dependence on Christ factor now as I get older. In the keynotes I do, though, there's a great line from Abraham Lincoln where he said, "I've been driven to my knees more times than I can possibly remember by the overwhelming awareness that I have nowhere left to go." So I want to ask you about that. How do you find Christ in the challenges of this work? Like, what's your own personal, how do you carry this spiritual load? I'm going from therapist now to spiritual director, but I'm genuinely interested. I think you've got some wisdom for us. How do, as a Catholic leader in an educational setting, where is Christ for you in this? How do you relate to Jesus in the complexity and challenge and risk of what you're doing?
Well, this might sound a little like I'm avoiding the question. I will tell you that it's in the Mass.
Yeah.
I've never enjoyed the Mass or felt it spiritually moving me and moving my faith than I have since I took on this job. And every Mass I go to, it seems to build upon itself. Because I, you know, again, the Mass, it's easy to go through the motions.
Yeah.
And then to really experience it. And, you know, for me, it was thoughtfully going through the Mass, thinking about how can this impact, this is the business guy in me, right?
Yeah.
How can I use this to
leverage,
be a better leader at the school,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, so I'll use that part of the homily next time I'm talking to the kids about whatever it is.
Yes.
But the Mass itself is such a moving, and I will tell you, you know, sometimes I'm a fairly conservative Catholic, as I'm going to describe it. And most of my staff are not fairly conservative Catholics.
Okay.
They're more of the progressive Catholics, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so sometimes I get bogged down in, oh my gosh, these, you know, they don't care whether there's a crucifix in the room. And for me, you got to have a crucifix in the classroom, right? Yeah. I mean, those very minor things.
Yeah.
And then I think about, no matter what we disagree on, we all come together at the Mass. There is no disagreement about the Mass.
Yeah.
That is what makes us Catholic.
Yeah.
And while there are crucifixes in my classrooms, you know, the Mass itself is what brings us all together as one Catholic faith and one Catholic church. And that's the inspiration for me. And, you know, reading, gosh, how about reading, you know, the readings before Mass?
Yeah.
Instead of waiting to be read to and then thinking about them instead of, you know, hearing them for the first time or, you know, dealing with the 6-year-old in the pew at the same time, you've read them beforehand and thinking about them. And,
yeah.
My answer is the Mass. How's that?
It's well, given that the Catechism says it's the source and the summit of the faith, that's that is an A-plus answer. You passed.
All right, I'll stay.
Well, we had a beautiful interview last week with Denise Brickler from the Archdiocese of St. Louis, and same thing, like source and summit, like the Mass. They're lucky to have daily Mass where they are, and look, for me too, Kelby, I think the longer I go, I mean, with the travel I do, I mean, you know, because you know Minneapolis well, the Basilica there, you know the Basilica there?
Yes.
It's just, when I spoke at Cisco, like the Mass there was phenomenal and just the beauty of that building and, you know, I just, as things get more complex, I just, like you were saying, you know, you find the presence of Christ there. Now, I want to ask you related to this, the Catholicity of the school, you know, what comes to mind is, you know, where Jesus sort of says, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? So how do you balance this awesome, genuine desire to see young people flourish professionally with the similar need to provide spiritual formation and Catholic identity? How do you juggle those parts? What works for you guys there?
Well, the direct answer is we have an awesome campus ministry program, and we invested in it early, and we continue to invest in it. And these young men and women in that campus ministry group do a remarkable job of ensuring when you walk into our building, you know you're in a Catholic school. You can feel it without seeing the crucifixes in the classrooms that this is a Catholic school. And it takes a lot to get there, and I will tell you, I struggled with that in the first couple of years of, you know, being at the school of, yeah, but what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's a sense that you get by being in there. We are working very hard to get, you know, a priest, a chaplain, more school sisters of Notre Dame to be on campus.
Yeah.
Because what worries me now is vocations.
Sure.
And if our students don't see what vocations look like, how young men and women are living out their lives and their vocation as a Catholic priest or as a sister, they just don't have that comparison,
yeah,
right? It's almost
absolutely.
Like when they're not working in white-collar environments at Hunt Oil, they don't know what those big, huge skyscrapers, what all those people do in there,
yeah,
because they don't have an experience with them. So that experience level with men and women of the cloth is something that we're really, you know, we struggle with and are really working on.
Yeah.
I'm pretty darn good at finding the jobs. I'm pretty good, darn good at raising the money and working with the architects to build buildings and all of that. The Catholicity part is not a, it's not a checklist. And so it's harder.
Yeah.
It's harder. At a time where, too, I think the Catholic faith itself is reinventing itself.
Yeah.
And so, I'll give you an example. Early on, we had a question about, okay, so we have an openly gay person who's now applying for a job as a teacher.
Sure.
And I remember calling the president of Jesuit Dallas and saying, okay, here we are. What do you guys do? What's your advice? How do we deal with this?
Yeah.
And he laughed at me. And he said, look, we dealt with that 20 years ago.
Wow.
And, here's how I would recommend you deal with that. But the church itself is changing the way we're talking about that, right?
Yeah.
In the way that, the love of people who are homosexual or have homosexual tendencies has always been there in the church. But how we talk about it is a little bit different. So I think, that's a struggle we're all going through. And that is something that, as a Catholic high school, we're at the forefront of that. Again, we're the field hospital of dealing with those kinds of issues that the church itself is dealing with.
Absolutely. Listening to you, I was talking to a friend recently, and so much of this goes back to leadership, doesn't it? Like, I've been really rattled, like no doubt many people have in the United States, over Cardinal McCarrick, because for me, for me that was the big one. Like, I can understand that we'd had abuse scandals. I understood that part, and as terrible as it is, but this was a case of, there's no way that this many heads could have been in the sand. Like, it's just, and this one's really affected everybody. But I think, because my first master's was in leadership and management, and I'm like, so much of what we need is convinced, holy, servant, professional leaders in our places, in our schools. And those leaders, I think, have to have a deep personal relationship with Christ. This is just me musing on how to solve the problems of the world. But, so much of this for me is just, if we have this personal relationship with Jesus in place and he's at the forefront of our lives, then so many other things, even difficult things, can be resolved. Now, let me ask
you. Well, you're exactly right. And if I can give you just my 30-second pontification on that, I was just talking to a priest in the diocese about this last week, and sort of the anger he was feeling and the feel from his parishioners about Cardinal McCarrick and that scandal.
Yeah.
And, it kind of came to the conclusion of, when you look at countries that go through a coup, right?
Yeah.
It's never the generals that do the coup. It's the colonels, right? It's the people underneath that.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure we should expect our cardinals and bishops and hierarchy to be the ones leading the reform.
Yeah.
I think it lies with us to do that, because they have a certain perspective, they're humans. And so they have a certain hierarchy that they have bought into.
Yeah.
And so now my bone bishop is probably going to hear this and call me into that. But unfortunately do not and cannot have the same perspective that priests who are serving their parishioners or even people in Catholic education may have. Because they never get the straight scoop, right? It's why the CEOs don't get the straight scoop.
Yeah.
You got to go down a few levels, find out really what's going on.
They reckon that's why Jack Welch was so successful at General Electric, because he had this very simple idea called the reality principle, which is he would bring in his unit heads from all over the world. He'd sit them in a room and he'd say, he goes, I don't care how bad things are. He goes, you just have to tell me the truth. He created a culture where he just said, I can't act, I can't lead if I don't have accurate information. So they reckon that a big part of his success was creating a culture around him where no matter difficult it was, people could tell the truth. I should try that in my own house with my three children under 10, see how that goes.
Let me know that. Now, that's a podcast. That's one.
So, I'm speaking in Grand Rapids next week, and David Faber, who's a wonderful superintendent there, asked me to polish up on my Gaudete et Exultate skills. So I've been rereading that document on sanctity of life and, listening to what we're talking about. What I'm doing in all the keynotes is just saying the clear teaching is that we're called to be saints. And every time I say that in a room, people laugh, right? Because people
just chuckle.
Well, we still have this association that saints are made in a factory in heaven. They roll off an assembly line. They're preordained. And all of us, you in your work, me in this work, all of us are actually called to holiness of life and sanctity. And if we do that through the sacraments, through the faith, through relationship with Jesus, then we tend to build institutions and schools and systems that reflect that. So it doesn't happen overnight, but it does happen.
No.
So,
and it will happen and has to happen. There's no alternative to that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So a few more questions for you as we wrap up. What do you want your legacy to be? You've had such an interesting life so far. How old are you now? 25?
So, yeah, close. Yeah. So I am now midlife, as they say, maybe on the upper cusp of midlife, in my late 40s.
Yeah.
And the legacy is, and this will sound, I'll be so humble that you'll know I'm humble because I'll give you humble words.
Yeah.
That it is not about, you know, boy, look at that school that Woodard built.
Yeah.
Or look at, you know, what a great job he did. It is about the legacy of Christo Rey Dallas and the students that graduate from there and the impact that they will make. And I know that sounds like gibberish, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. And the rest of it really doesn't matter. It is about the small part that I played, you know, the skill set that I brought to the table to be a small part of that success. But, you know, to your point, 12,000 kids right now, you know, 24,000 kids have graduated from Christo Rey schools.
Wow.
The impact that that makes on a generation, the impact that makes on leadership in our church, leadership and the business community and government and everywhere else is so positive as a result of the experience these kids have. And I'm just grateful to have had a small part in doing that.
So good. It's like the leaven, isn't it? It's that parable of the leaven. It just works its way through the whole batch and can really transform culture. A couple of quick ones. What do you most enjoy about this work at the moment? What brings you the most joy?
Well, on a very earthly level, every time we convince a job partner, you know, a corporation to join us.
Yeah.
That is a small victory because of how important it is to the lifeblood of the school.
Yeah.
And it's good to you know, it's spreading the joy, right? And the good news that we have as a Christo Rey school. But, you know, it also is, as any father would tell you, it's the five kids that I have, the joy that, you know, you see in them every day and raising them in a certain way. You know, it's that's the joy of it all. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, as I'm leaving school and the rugby team is waving at me and saying goodbye, Mr. Woodard. And then I get home and the 6-year-old is around my ankles wanting to tell me about his day. That's what it's all about, right? I mean, you can talk to the mayor of Dallas. You can talk to the CEO of Hunt Oil all you want.
Yeah.
The only straight scoop you're getting is from that Christo Rey Dallas rugby team at 6 o'clock at night and that 6-year-old at 6:15 at night.
100%. What's most challenging for you in this work? What do you find hardest?
You know, my background is in business and politics, and I will tell you, and maybe the folks listening to this podcast will now turn it off. academia itself is difficult for me to kind of get my head, around.
Yeah.
They operate in a different way than the rest of us do, and I am learning, and I think they are too.
Yeah.
That's the other nice thing about it is it's, you know, we all can get bogged down in our own paradigms here of the only way to be successful, to run a successful organization. And I learn a lot from my principal is just phenomenal, but she is not at all like me. You know, it's that old Ronald Reaganism, you surround yourself by people much smarter than you are, and it'll all work out. And so honestly, the toughest challenge I have is the academic side, you know, and I'm teaching a class this year.
Wow.
And I'm doing that because I want to, you know, understand that world a little bit better.
Yeah.
And when you're out selling jobs and raising money, you lose sight of the kids and you just don't know them as well. So this year, my plan is to get a little bit closer to our kids, a little bit closer to the families that we serve, because that's where a lot of the nourishment for why you do what you do is, right?
Yeah. Hey, so have you taught a class yet?
I'm starting this fall. I taught a class graduate level to a bunch of mid-level police chiefs getting their master's degree from St. John's University in Minnesota. But that was a lot different world than, 17-year-old kids out of Southeast Dallas. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm an open mind and I'm going to grin and bear it when my principal gives me feedback, right?
I just want to get some live stream cameras and just go Facebook Live for an hour and go. Because, I mean, like, I think it's awesome what you're saying, because, I mean, you've had a career like a lot of us who have some success, and you know, you've done big corporate and politics, and stepping into the classroom can actually be more daunting sometimes than stepping on the floor of the house. Yeah. I wanted to ask you.
I wanted to ask you,
one of the big concerns we have in the podcast and in the work that I do is around teacher burnout resilience. It's a profession where they give and they give and they give. And I'm really interested in how people recover and receive. Could you give us some insights either from what you're witnessing with teachers, what do you think works or they need to be doing, or even from your own journey?
Sure.
You know, because in big corporate, they work you pretty hard.
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about resilience, recovery, burnout. What do you think are some of the things people should be thinking about?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and one that we certainly worry about. We do a couple of small things. Like, we do, you know, what we call work-life balance day. So one day every week, regardless if you're a member of the faculty or the staff, you've got, you don't have to be at work till 10:30, you know, that day. And it's the same day every week to allow you to get the stuff done you need to get done. Take the kids to the dentist.
Yeah.
You know, do all those things. Take those stresses out of your life to know that I've got that, you know, block of time no matter what every week that I can do that. You know, because of our work schedule, right? So the juniors are all gone on Thursdays.
Yeah.
The seniors are all gone on Thursdays. If you're teaching seniors, you have Thursday to do planning.
Yeah.
To take a breath here. So we're really keen on not having our teachers take a lot of work home. I know they do some. You know, we're there already from 7:30 to 5:15 every day with the kids. So, you know, let's give them time within that day to do their jobs. When they go home, they're home.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is important. And we do a lot of things to feed. We do a lot of retreats. We do 3 retreats a year with our faculty and staff.
Yeah.
You know, spiritual retreats that I think also kind of helps reposition us on what's important. So you're right. It's a tough one. We've got a pretty young staff, honestly. And real quickly, because this is a revelation to me in the last few months, I looked around at all of our teachers. We have 34 teachers, and about 2 of them are from Dallas.
Wow.
And it just came to me as a revelation the last couple of months. That's because they all decided they wanted to work at a Cristo Rey school.
Yeah.
And then figured out Dallas was the school that had the openings and the reputation they were looking for.
Wow.
So they moved and came here. Very few of our teachers, you know, were teachers in Dallas who got up one morning, looked around and said, I want to find a job as a teacher. Oh, yeah. Look, Cristo Rey's home.
Sure.
The mission was first to those teachers, and the location was secondary in their opinion.
That's such
and
a
so
thing.
We've only lost 1 teacher in the last 4 years.
Wow.
So our retention rates are pretty good.
That's so good. I was listening to you. I was remembering when I first was teaching, when I taught sort of middle school when I started out, and the first year I had 6 classes to teach, 6 subjects. I had bus duty. I had rugby coaching both at the school and for state. I got married 3 months into that first year, and I almost cracked. I was like, I remember having a good look at this going, this system's broken. You can't expect humans. Especially, the reason I mention this because you talked about how Thursdays the seniors are gone. So just giving those teachers a chance to read, to listen to amazing podcasts, shameless plug, but listen, to learn, to grow, to be creative. Like, you know, from a business background, creativity is one of the X factors. You know, it's like, as you know, it's – so I just think, I think, you know, a lot of teachers listening are like, yes, please give us Thursdays off.
Yeah.
But I just people really need to take care of themselves in the education space. Well, a final question is we always like to ask this one, that if you – imagine we bring you in and there's 100 young teachers in a room getting ready to start out, and we've brought in Kelby Woodard, and we're like, you know, Kelby, give us 3 things from your observation so far that young teachers need to think about in the faith perspective, in the professional perspective. What 3 things from your heart would you really want to share with young teachers?
All right. So the number one thing would be, especially from the Catholic perspective, is go to Mass as often as you possibly can.
Amen.
And be, you know, be immersed in what's going on at Mass. The second thing I would say, and this is more on the academic side, is we've got a couple of teachers that have been around and have been teaching 20 or 30 years, or 20, 25 years. And they came to our system, which is a very much, you know, coaching. We do a lot of coaching and we teach a lot differently than the way my alma mater, Jesuit Dallas, teaches, as an example. And so that tells me that, you know, you need to have an openness to learning, an openness to coaching. Like I said, I'm not looking forward to it, but I know I have to do it. My principal is going to give me all kinds of coaching about the way I teach over the next year, but I'm up for it, right? Because yeah. That's the only way you're going to get better. So that coaching, that constant yearning to do things differently and to find different ways to do it, even, you know, for the benefit of your students, but for the benefit of you yourself. And I think the last one's the one we've been talking about, and that is it's okay to disconnect.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that we, in our first year, we got into a bad habit of, we'd send emails to, you know, students at 11 o'clock at night before the next day of, you know, remember tomorrow is full uniform day for mass, because we were so much running and gunning. And the effect that has on the anxiety level of our faculty and staff and of our students is just incomprehensible. And really the impact, you know, you were talking about being a young teacher. You're pretty good to recognize as a young teacher that you were going to crack. I find most of my teachers don't realize that, and they don't see it in themselves that they're working too long. And if they don't step back for a minute, this is going to be a sprint that's going to last a couple of years instead of a marathon that's going to impact so many more kids if they can take care of themselves and do this for the long haul.
Wow. Honestly, that is so good. That last one, marathon, not a sprint. In this country now, new teachers coming out of teachers college, they're gone within 4 years. So
yeah. And so what good does that do?
Exactly.
The system, what good does it do to the kids? Yeah.
Well,
you're right.
It's a 4-year degree and they're lasting less than 4 years once they're out. And I think it's what you're saying. Yeah. It's like, you know, when you mentioned that email at 11 o'clock at night, I was just thinking about this yesterday, the sheer volume of content coming at all of us. I was in a hotel last week and I watched a TED talk from Cal Newport, who wrote a really good book I recommend to people called Deep Work. And so he's famous for disconnecting every social media account that he had. And he gave his TED talk about it. I'll put it in the show notes for people. But he just said the ability to not be interrupted all the time and just to actually focus and learn and read. So I want to summarize what you said, your big three. The centrality of the mass, which I think Kelby's just so crucial. And I want to thank you for that, because I often like to say that the key to success in life is to make your problems God's problems. And I think if we simply come to the mass with all the burdens of the education space, then we bring them in the offertory and he can really transform those. So thank you for sharing that. The second key point was around openness to learning, which I took as feedback, like an openness to hearing about how you can grow. And I, once again, I'm grateful you've agreed to live stream your first teaching class next year, this year. And finally, you talked about disconnecting. And I think that's just so good. People need to hear that. So what's on tomorrow? What's happening at Cristo Rey tomorrow?
Well, so tomorrow we're continuing to do onboarding with new students as they go to their job for the first time and kind of get themselves acquainted, which is a lot of fun, taking a 14-year-old up to the 45th floor of the Chase Tower when they've never been higher than three stories, right, and looking out that window. So that's a lot of fun. That's our next few days. But I want to extend an invitation to you when you're in Dallas, since you mentioned you were a rugby coach.
Yeah.
We have a rugby team that is pretty darn good. So we'd love to have you come to one of our, I guess, their matches. I believe that's what they're called. I'm learning rugby myself. We've only been doing this for we're in our second year. So we'd love to have you come down and witness the beauty of a Cristo Rey Dallas rugby match.
I'd love to do that.
On the pitch.
I mean, I'm in Dallas-Fort Worth airport all the time. And any chance to – can I just say, by the way, it's one of the better airports in the world.
You're welcome.
Hopefully I'll escape there pretty soon and come and see you guys. It'd be great to meet in person. But
be great.
Listen, Kelby Woodard, I just want to thank you for your generosity. It's getting into evening time and you've got a six-year-old waiting for you and a few more. But I want to, on behalf of the listeners, I want to thank you for your courage. I want to thank you for taking a risk. And I want to thank you for playing your part in generational change. And we want to wish you every success at Cristo Rey. But thank you so much for being on the Catholic Teacher Podcast.
Well, that's very kind of you, and thank you for all that you're doing, Jonathan. This is the way it works. This is how you spread the message. So thank you for doing that and for all the work that you do.
Amen. God bless you. Thank you, my friend.
All right, Jonathan. Bye-bye.
Hey guys, Jonathan with you once again. I hope you enjoyed hearing that as much as I did recording that. Just the energy, the enthusiasm, the humility. I got so much out of that discussion, and I think Kelby's a great example of just how the game is definitely not over for Catholic education. It's a, you know, there's a place for inventiveness, for energy, for passion, and you look at the effect. 12,000 students so far, 24,000 already graduated. Catholic schools can really change culture, and I think Christo Rey is right at the forefront of that. So I hope that you really got some inspiration, some encouragement from that. I'd love you to post a comment wherever you're hearing this. Please check out all the notes in the show notes. I'll put links there to anything that I mentioned. So check out all the links to the Going Deeper program. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Thanks for the pleasure of your time. Kelby, if you're listening, thank you so much, my friend, for being available for us and for sharing your wisdom and your journey with us. It was just fantastic to hear it. Please, everybody listening, would you do me a favor? Would you share this podcast? The coolest thing is if we just get more and more teachers listening to this each week. So I really want to ask for your help in getting the message out there. Just grab the link wherever you're hearing it. Put it on your social media feeds. Email it to a few friends. Talk about it in a staff meeting. Say, hey, everybody, jump on your favorite podcast player and do a search for the Catholic Teacher Podcast. But for now, that's it from me. Got a big week next week. I'm speaking in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm speaking in Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm speaking in Arlington, Minneapolis, Washington again, and then in Los Angeles over an 8-day time block. So keep me in your prayers. Let's just hope that God does really cool stuff. But that's it for me for this week. I'm Jonathan Doyle. Going to have another episode for you next week in the Catholic Teacher Podcast.